It's 8:13 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Utah's black bears have awoken from their winter's hibernation and are now out and about. The Utah Division of Wildlife Resources has had a few bear sightings already reported to them. On the phone to share some tips about how to stay safe in bear country, I have Public Information Officer Faith Heaton-Jolly. Good morning, Faith.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so it's been a couple of years since we've seen bears here in Park City. We had one that showed up in Pinebrook for a while. We even had one come down from the mountains, made its way across Deer Valley Drive before headed up into the hills. Any ideas how many reports of sightings that you get every year?
I actually am not sure. And I think it just depends, honestly, from year to year, how often they're coming into campsites or in different urban areas. But yes, we have had a couple of reports already throughout different areas of the state this year.
Yeah, and are bears found throughout the state of Utah, or is it just in the northern area?
Nope, they are. They're all over the state. Yep, and usually in different forest areas. But yeah, they're spread out from up here in the northern part of the state down to southern Utah.
Mm-hmm. And we call them black bears, but they're more brown in color, no?
Yeah, so they can actually be both black and brown. Yeah, that's kind of a common misconception that people have because their name is black bears. They assume that they're all black. But yes, there are a lot that are brown. But they can also be black as well.
And that's the only kind of bear we'll find in Utah? We won't find any grizzlies here?
Correct. Yep. Black bears are currently the only native bear species in Utah. Grizzlies are mainly right now in Wyoming and Montana.
Okay. So where's the most likely place that you would find a bear?
It just totally depends. There's obviously some in the Uintas. We kind of advertise that as bear country here. But really, a lot of the kind of higher elevation, wooded areas, you could possibly see a bear. So that's kind of why we're offering some of these safety tips now, is people are starting to get out camping and hiking in some of those areas.
Okay. And for those of us who grew up watching Yogi Bear, it seems that bears really like to eat what we eat. Is that really the case?
Yeah, you know what? That is true. They actually, it's kind of interesting, they don't actually typically eat a lot of meat. They do kind of focus more on some different fruits and, bugs and things like that. And they'll just eat anything that people eat. So that's one of our big kind of safety tips, is they have a great sense of smell. So we ask people, if they smell what you're cooking and you're camping in their home, it might entice them to come over and check it out.
So what happens then with bears is that they just figure it's easier to snatch a picnic basket than it is to scavenge for their own food, huh?
Right. Yep. And so, exactly. So we ask people, if you are going to be camping or having a picnic somewhere, make sure you're bear-proofing your food is kind of what we say. We recommend that people lock it in their, trailer, in the trunk of their car, and just basically make sure it's not in an area where they'll be able to smell it and have easy access to it. Especially, we recommend never, never keeping those kind of items in your tent.
Right. And when you talk about food and snacks, I also, because of their great sense of smell, they'll also go after things like deodorant and toothpaste?
They will, yep. They can just smell some of those more strongly scented items, and it can attract them to an area. So, yeah, we specifically ask a lot of people, that I've seen camping will sometimes, brush their teeth at their little water spigot area, and then they'll just leave their toothpaste and toothbrush on, their picnic table at their campsite. And we just recommend that people, lock those items away as well. Even though it's not traditional food for us, it is something that's strongly scented that could attract a bear.
Okay. And again, if campsites don't have any kind of bear locker, then putting it in the trunk of your car and just parking your car as far away from the tent as possible is a good idea?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah, usually it's just more the fact that it will kind of mask some of that smell, and it's just hard for them to get into. So yeah, that's why we kind of recommend, bear-proof coolers or locking it in your camper trailer or just somewhere in your car.
Okay. And then in just terms of cooking grills, because those are provided at some campsites, how you're camping, how do you keep something like that clean?
Yeah, and that's one that a lot of people probably don't think about. because they think, you know, there's not food left on it, but it still can have some of that residue, some of that scent. So yeah, we usually ask that people will bring something to kind of clean it, you know, if you're even just wiping it down with paper towels that you have at your site. And then the biggest thing is a lot of people just think once they're done cooking some meat or bacon or something, they'll just dump the oil or the grease somewhere in their campsite. And obviously that's a very pungent smell. And so that's one as well that we ask, you know, rather than dumping it, make sure you're putting those oils and grease and things into some kind of container, whether that's a Tupperware or, you know, just a Ziploc bag. And so it can kind of keep your campsite area cleaner, and it will reduce that smell from that food residue.
Okay. I guess the biggest lesson is don't feed the bears, because that just keeps them coming back, huh?
Yes. Yep. And it is one thing, like a lot of people will think, you know, they're just having this fun interaction with this animal. But the truth is, if a bear loses its fear of people and it's being drawn to an area, you know, typically if it keeps coming back and it kind of does become a threat to people, then that animal unfortunately does have to be euthanized to keep people safe. And so, you know, that's one thing we're saying, you know, if you love these wildlife, you like to see them for their safety as well, you know, just make sure you're keeping them away from people and from your campground.
And finally, just what would you do if you should encounter a bear?
Yes, we have a couple of tips. And again, all of this is on our website for those who would like to learn more. But if you do encounter a bear, we recommend that you just stand your ground. You know, don't back up. Don't act submissive. Don't lie down. Don't play dead with black bears. And, you know, just kind of stay calm and you know, give the bear a chance to leave. And we especially recommend, you know, don't run away or climb a tree, because they will outrun and outclimb you. You know, they can, a lot of people don't know, black bears can run up to 35 miles an hour. So you're not going to be able to outrun them. And then we just recommend if a bear does attack, you know, usually they're just more curious. And if you kind of are assertive and stand your ground, they'll, you know, take that opportunity to leave. But if they do attack, then we recommend, like, definitely fight back.
All right. And is bear spray effective?
Yeah, it typically is. Yep. Bear spray. And we say if people don't have bear spray, a lot of people don't really carry it in Utah as much. We say just use anything that you have with you, your backpack, you know, rocks, water bottles, like just anything you can to fight back. And a lot of people have been successful in that.
All right. And I know just another one of your trips, it's just like says no bear behavior. So if a bear is standing up, it's not being aggressive.
Yeah, yep. So that's one thing. If they stand up or grunt or moan or kind of make other noises, it's kind of their way of expressing themselves that they're just kind of, you know, interested in what they're seeing. They're trying to get a better look or trying to kind of smell you. But yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're about to attack.
Okay. Again, you said all of this information on your website. How can people access that?
Yep, yeah. You can just go to wildlife.utah.gov, and all of our bear tips are currently on our homepage near the bottom of that page.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, just stay safe. You know, be smart when you're recreating in the wild, and remember that you are, you know, in their natural habitat for these animals. So just kind of respect that and keep your sites and areas clean.
Yeah, because then if there is some kind of attack, that means probably the end of the bear's life, yeah?
Yep, exactly. Yep. And a lot of times, you know, the campground area has to be closed while it's investigated. And so, yeah, just keep it safe for everybody, for you, for others that are going to come camp there, and for the bears as well.
Okay. Hey, Faith Jolly is the Public Information Officer for the Division of Wildlife Resources. Thanks for your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Okay. Park City Council will consider a plat amendment for the Woodside Park Phase 2 development, as well as wrapping up its conversations around fiscal year 2020 at Thursday's City Council meeting. Joining us for a preview, I have Park City Manager Diane Foster, along with Senior Planner Hannah Tyler. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hannah, let's start with you. A couple weeks ago, the Park City Planning Department approved the master plan development and conditional use permit for Phase 2 of Woodside Park. Also forwarded a positive recommendation to the council to approve the project's plat amendment. The council now considering final approval of that. One resident had mentioned that he may appeal the Planning Commission's decision. So with the city as the applicant on the project, how does that work?
So we did receive an appeal for the master plan development, and that was received on Monday, and that was filed on behalf of Douglas Lee, who owns property at 1356 Empire Avenue. And the City Council, pursuant to Land Management Code, can refer that appeal to the Board of Adjustment because it is a city project, and so that's within their right. That's established in the Land Management Code. And so because it is a city project, they'll be hopefully referring that to the Board of Adjustment in on the consent agenda.
So does that stop the process here then? I mean, it can, does the council doesn't vote on it while it's being in the appellate part of it?
So all that does is that just refers the final review authority for the appeal itself to the Board of Adjustment, but the plat would still remain at the City Council because that's a separate action. And while we're speaking about the plat, I've been informed that the Affordable Housing Project Team will request a continuation on Thursday for the plat, pending the outcome of the appeal. The plat's actually reviewed under a different set of criteria, but because they can't move forward with the project until the appeal is finalized, they wanted to continue it until we resolve the appeal process.
Can you tell me what the grounds of Mr. Lee's appeal are?
Some of it is with the criteria of the Land Management Code that's being applied to the project, but I think at this point we have not fully reviewed the appeal, and so we're going to wait until we go to the Board of Adjustment to discuss that.
Okay. The staff report details all of the public outreach that was done for this development, but it seemed if the Planning Commission meeting was any indication, still some confusion and concern. I mean, is there anything you think that the city could have been done differently to better educate the public and consider, you know, their concerns on the project?
So in terms of the land management processes, this application was noticed within the rights of the Land Management Code process in the noticing matrix. But I do know that the Affordable Housing Team, prior to fully submitting an application, they did a public outreach process through their own public outreach process with the Linda Jaeger and our team up in sustainability. And so there was some outreach prior to actually filing an application. But just to be clear, is planning staff had nothing to do with that because that was prior to the formal application.
And I'll add to that, you know, it's people have a lot going on in their lives, and this has been at council for years, and we've been discussing it and looking at images. Council's been discussing it. We've been on the radio. We've been in the newspaper. But the reality is it's not unusual for people to come out and protest at the point at which they're looking at approvals. And so we understand, we do everything we can. And the good news is we did talk to a lot of neighbors and we have had a lot of communication. It's just now we're at the point where people are filing appeals.
Yeah, I think that the hope was that once the approval happened that you would even be able to get in the ground this summer, maybe even this early fall. Does the appeal then just kind of quash that from happening? Is this now a year out?
You know, I spoke with Community Development Director Ann Laurent and Jason Glidden last night, and as Planner Tyler said, there's no requirement for the city to continue this item, but we also were wanting to honor the public and say, hey, we understand that this is going to be an appeal, and so we're okay putting this on hold. They didn't think it would affect the project schedule at this point unless the appeal is granted.
Oh, okay. So when do you expect that to get to the Board of Adjustment?
We have not formally set a date. We're still working with our Board of Adjustment to nail that down, but we have 45 days to schedule a hearing from the date that the appeal is filed, and so we're working to be within that 45-day period.
Okay. Is the appeal online or something that people can have a look at to see the grounds for it?
Not at this time. It's not posted online, but we will be posting, obviously, the packet for that meeting prior to the Friday before that meeting.
We just received the appeal yesterday. We knew in the morning that it might come in, and we didn't get it until late afternoon. And so I was talking to the community development director and the housing manager at about 6 o'clock last night, right? So this is very new.
All right. Let's see. Last week, the council approved a memorandum of understanding for contributing $60,000 to the Summit County Mental Health Director position, a full-time position with the county. It led to a much larger conversation about how much money Park City contributes to different county projects and positions. So I think you've got 45 minutes slated to talk specifically about this issue or about this position.
It's a good question. The council decided that the question of there are a number of situations where Park City is asked to contribute to county either departments or positions, and the other communities aren't asked to do that. And so that discussion is going to happen at the retreat, which is going to be on July 31st at 10:05 at the Library Community Room. So this is specifically a conversation, and we appreciate the County Health Director, Rich Bola, coming out for this one, specifically to talk about this position, because it appears that there may have been some changes as far as initially, the city funded this because we were concerned that it wasn't, the county had put some money into it but hadn't necessarily committed to long-term funding of this position. The county is now very much committed to that, and so the city's saying, hey, should we contribute to that or should we contribute to another part of the program? So I don't think there's any interest in pulling funding. It's more of what's the right thing and the right place to put it. This is still one of council's top priorities. They confirmed that in the retreat this year. So very supportive of mental wellness. And the county's efforts in the nonprofit community have been doing a really outstanding job.
The council had a similar conversation around the funding of the Central Wasatch Commission. Again, Park City paying $100,000 or being asked to pay $100,000. Summit County paying $50,000. And as we heard from Council Member Tim Henney, about half of that $50,000 is being paid for by city residents. So we've got Park City people paying $125,000, whereas county residents paying $25,000. So we're going to see a similar thing with this position as well, yeah?
That's absolutely it. And, you know, when you think about Park City, we are fortunate to have such a large visitor population. And so the city of Park City does generate in pretty much every tax that there is, whether it's property tax or sales tax, a majority, in some cases it's a slight majority of taxes. And so it's a conversation the council wants to have. It's not by any means an attack on the county. We have a great relationship with Summit County and appreciate it. But these questions always come up, even with things like the wrap tax, you know, where a certain percentage is generated in the city. It's a question, should funds come back to the city?
So the July 31st retreat you mentioned, was that a county, a city, or was the school district that?
The initial retreat was in February. The city council frequently does a mid-year retreat, and so this year they'll be doing it on July 31st, and that's the one where I think we're going to have a heavily focused tax discussion. You heard Council Member Steve Joyce as well as Council Member Tim Henney and the balance of the council, Nan Worrell as well. The full council was interested in having some more deeper dives on financial discussions.
Okay. And we still don't know what the state is going to do now with its tax reform and how that could impact the city.
We are thankful to have Representative Tim Quinn as our representative. He defended us well during the legislature, and it is absolutely something we will be hyper-focused on. Typically, in these kind of discussions, Park City, because we are such a large generator of sales tax, we have the largest disproportion in the state of ratio of sales tax generated to full-time population. So we're always on the defense on this.
The council also Thursday holding its final budget hearing before it's scheduled to adopt the budget June 20th. The discussion Thursday includes compensation for the mayor, city council, and city manager, the attorney, treasurer, engineer, and recorder. Looks like everyone will be receiving a 2% increase to reflect market rate adjustments.
Actually, not necessarily. What happens is that the positions get a 2% increase. So we benchmark our positions every other year, and then on the off year, we move it 2%. Now we don't move it according to the CPI. We move it according to just the 2%. So sometimes the CPI, as it is this year, I believe it's 2.1%. So it's moving the grade. We have a pay for performance philosophy. So in order to be eligible for that, you have to be doing a good job.
That's not the case, though, with the mayor and city council, is it?
No, with the mayor and city council, the assumption is they are doing a good job and they do get a 2% increase.
Okay. And so, again, we're talking about just that range that the position.
Correct.
All right. It looked like the range for City Attorney Mark Harrington was down a bit.
The positions don't typically or ever go down. I don't believe that went down. It may have actually the 2%, it would have gone up 2%, the range.
Okay. I was just wondering, though, because we brought on a special counsel with Margaret Plain, did mm-hmm. that mean that the city attorney then not doing as much work as he or she was doing previously?
While Mark Harrington would probably take a pay cut because Margaret's been a great addition to the city, Margaret has taken on additional work and Mark has taken on a lot of the land use work that we saw done by other attorneys in the past.
So he won't take a cut?
No, he's not taking a pay cut. And her salary is part of the city council's budget consideration this year.
All right. Last week, the budget discussion focused on a lot of new hires and reorganization of positions and teams and departments. You had mentioned a new hire, someone who will be working with the housing and legal departments that's being funded by a planner position that was vacated. So what role does this new position serve?
Yeah, we're very excited to have Rebecca Ward back at the city. She initially started with the city as a legal intern and then and was quite successful and built a lot of good relationships and is very high performer. Hannah's nodding her head because she had a lot of experience working with her on a lot of challenging pieces. The planning department decided that it would be good if they brought someone in who both had planning experience as well as could do policy and had the legal background to be able to do work on everything from deed restrictions to helping out with other housing policy things. This will add capacity to that team, which council's interested in. And council actually asked for this week, we'll be having a deeper discussion about adding additional capacity to that team with the idea of we've got our projects lined out and can we make those happen faster if we have more people?
So is Rebecca Ward an attorney, a paralegal?
She's not acting as an attorney. She is, I believe, a licensed attorney. But she'll be acting in both a planning role as well as a housing role. I mean, it's primarily a planning role that doing housing. And I think the day she walked in the door, she got a bunch of plats dropped on her. So she's fully engaged.
Okay, so that's taking one of the planning positions then that was in the planning department. Does that mean that you've got more work then? Hannah?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think she's absolutely stepping up and assisting us in the projects we already have. So it's not that things were allocated differently. It's just we're adding her to our team.
Okay. Angela Mosqueda spoke during public comment last week, the only public comment you've received during this entire budget process. She says the staff reports and agendas are too difficult to navigate and understand. There's even some wrong and misleading information. Both Steve Joyce and Andy Bierman mentioning that there were some mathematical errors. So how can the budget process be streamlined so it is more straightforward?
I really appreciate Angela coming to the meeting and would encourage folks to come and do and provide public input. Angela and I have a meeting after she gave that. We set up a meeting later this month to have a deeper dive discussion. Budget documents are complicated. Anybody's budget documents, KPCW budget documents are complicated. Staff does a lot of things to try to make it more streamlined. One of the things that they do is they show how this is aligned with the strategic plan. So the way it's presented is specifically related to outcomes that the council wants to see. That's our budgeting for outcomes philosophy. One of the things that Jed and I talked about this week was we didn't have a refresher on budgeting for outcomes this year, and we probably want to do that every year prior to the budget process. We also do produce a citizens budget, and one of the things I thought of this morning in hearing the story was maybe we do a draft citizens budget prior to the budget hearings and then update it afterwards. Typically, staff waits to produce the citizens budget, and we're one of the few communities in Utah that actually has a citizens budget that is, you can still go to the, if you're a finance nerd, you can still go and read the full budget. However, if you're someone like me who's my expertise is not in finance, it's a great document to go in and dive deeper. Can we improve this? Absolutely. I'm looking forward to talking to Angela about ways that we can make it more understandable and more accessible. But I think the citizens' budget could act as a great executive summary, and maybe producing that prior to the budget, or once we've got the city manager's recommended budget, that could be an opportunity.
Well, I'm going to throw out an editorial comment. I mean, at least we can get the budget, because Wasatch County School District, you have to grandma to get a copy of the budget. I've asked for it, and it says it's posted on the website, but it's not. So, interesting. Also wanted just to bring up in work session the Historic Park City Alliance contract renewal. This is something that the city, I didn't realize that there was some kind of contract.
There is. The city has formed an entity called Business Improvement District, or BID, and this is done in partnership with the HPCA, and what it allows is that the city levies a $243 trash fee on businesses to pay for, because the city doesn't, and even the county doesn't typically, so county does trash services, but county doesn't get involved in commercial trash services. So this allows us to, and this is at the request of the HPCA, to have a service on Main Street to make sure it looks great. It is part of our tourist economy. This particular update has to do with wanting to reduce the amount of solid waste, so maybe improving, so looking at can we improve the recycling program. And one of the primary interests of the finance staff who's been working with Economic Development Manager Jonathan Weidenhammer on this is to look at can we have better measurables and better metrics as part of this contract as well.
Okay. Let's see. The backhoe report is back. A lot of good information there if people are interested in what's going on. This is something that, what, you just do every summer to provide that public outreach?
We do this every summer, and when Craig Sanchez was community liaison, we at that point decided that we would include private projects and public projects, because if you're a member of the public, you actually don't care if it's a city project or a Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District project, or if it's a private project. If it's impacting you, you want to know about it. Thanks to resident advocate Michelle Downard for updating this report, and actually she's added some formatting and some other things to this report that makes it really easily accessible. There's also a map online, so you can go in our GIS department, she's worked with them, and you can go in and click on things and find out, okay, what's where, what's near me, and let me find out. And it includes also anticipated impacts and anticipated end dates.
Okay. Anything else you two wanted to mention?
That's it for today. Thanks,
okay.
Leslie.
Diane Foster, Hannah Tyler, thanks for your time. KPCW News Time now, 8:46. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the PC Mark offering a couple of opportunities for women to learn and improve at mountain biking. In the studio, I have Recreation and Marketing Supervisor Jessica Moran. Good morning.
Good morning.
So first, you have the Women's Mountain Biking Clinics, and these are really just a great way, I guess, to start the biking season. When do these start?
We start them up next week, actually. These are a great way to start out the mountain biking season, and they fill up pretty quickly every year. We do actually have a couple of spots available in the two beginner classes that we offer and the one intermediate class. We offer a morning session for beginners and an evening session, just trying to make sure that we can fit everyone's schedule in. And then our intermediate session, which starts a little bit later in July, actually is an evening session as well. So we're excited to get these underway. You know, everybody's been itching to get out on the trails, and now things are finally drying out. And so we want to make sure that everybody is feeling comfortable and ready to get out there and ride.
Okay, what's the cost then for these clinics?
You know, it's really inexpensive, $80, and it's for four classes total. We meet on Tuesday and Thursday for 2 weeks total. So, for example, the beginner morning session starts next week on the 11th, and that runs from 10 a.m. to 12:30 in the afternoon, Tuesday, Thursday, until the 20th. And the p.m. session is the same dates. It's just in the evening from 5:30 to 8 p.m.
Okay. So what are they going to learn?
So in the beginner class, we spend a little bit of time doing kind of basic maintenance, things that you would want to do trail side before you got out on your ride. We also talk about your bike from one end to the other and just really help everyone get familiar with the different components. And then we head out on a ride and work on kind of basics, basically braking, cornering, climbing. Really, switchbacks is the thing, you know, that a lot of people want tips on. And I think with the women's classes, the great thing about that is that you're with a group of women who are all there for the same reasons. And it's very helpful to everyone's confidence to have just a supportive group there and, you know, no judgment or anything like that. And we have really great success. We've put a lot of people through the program and it's been a lot of fun.
All right. So who's leading the rides?
So myself and Lauren Howarder are the instructors. We are level one IMBA certified instructors. And gosh, at this point, we have been teaching those classes for at least 10 years. And so it's, you know, we learn something ourselves every year as well. And we just have a great time. I know there are a lot of options out there for women. But this program being so affordable, and like I said, just a small group, we take only 6 or 7 women in each group, has been really fun.
Yeah. So do you ride from the mark or do you just meet at different places? Or
we meet at different places. The class begins at the mark. Like I said, doing that basic maintenance and kind of going over the bike, we spend the first day there. And then, you know, we're so lucky to be so close to Round Valley that we've got the trails in close proximity. And then we do meet at other locations in town as well.
Okay. So you can register online for that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. All of our registration takes place at parkcityrecreation.org. There's a link on our main page for online registration, and you can see the women's mountain biking clinics and then a couple other biking programs that we have as well.
Yeah, so you've got what you call Moms on Bikes Mob.
Yes, and Park City Mob.
Okay, and tell us about that.
So this these are weekly rides that we do on Wednesday mornings starting at 9:30, and locations change every week. We start on the 26th, and they're every Wednesday at 9:30 a.m. So we do a little bit different of a time than, say, the Team Sugar rides or the White Pine Touring, you know, Thursday night rides. There are a lot of, again, we want to give a lot of options so that people have the chance to get out and about. These rides are led by moms. They're for moms. We try to start out, you know, a little bit more basic at the beginning of the year and then progress throughout the season. And so people can join us for one ride or they can join us every week and, you know, spend the summer with a great group of ladies. It's a very minimal cost to become a mob member, we call it. And from there, you know, you just get this terrific group of people who get out there on Wednesday mornings and really have a great time.
Yeah. So you started charging this year $20.
We did, just $20. We offered that program for free for a very, very long time. And, you know, just something that we wanted to try to cover some costs associated with that. But with that $20 cost, you get, you know, a full season of those Wednesday rides. You get a pair of Park City Recreation mountain biking socks. And then we also provide a small discount on our Epic rides, which are two rides that we do, one in the spring and one in the fall. And those are open to both women and men. Our first one coming up this spring is on the WOW Trail, and we provide the shuttle, we guide the ride, and we have a great barbecue at the end with everybody, and that's a really minimal cost as well, just $25 to join that group, and that's really for, you know, intermediate or better level riders.
Okay. That's happening Wednesday, June 26th in the morning then? Is that when
that's actually in the afternoon. Okay. So we meet at the mark at 5:30 and then we will do the ride and the shuttle brings everyone back to the mark at the end.
Okay. Let's see. The mob rides, how are those different than the clinics?
So the mob rides are just guided rides. We actually don't provide any instruction. It's really more a group of ladies getting together and everyone shows up. And we, like I said, we change the location every week. So we get out on different trails. And that's a lot of fun because it's a chance for women to meet other riders, especially of their same skill level, and have a riding partner for the summer.
Yeah. Again, you give out the weekly email in so people know where to go and when to be there.
Exactly. Once they register, they're on our list. And so we send out on Mondays the location of the ride.
Okay. PC Mark or Park City Recreation. What is it? Park City Recreation.
Yes. ParkCityRecreation.org. You can always call us at the Mark front desk as well at 435-615-5401.
Okay. Anything else going on?
so much going on. We would be here forever to talk about it. But yeah, there's a lot of great stuff. Our pools are now open. You know, school's out tomorrow, really, for most of Park City School District. So pools are in session, swim lessons, camps, everything's going on. So parkcityrecreation.org, you can find all the info.
Okay, that's Park City Mark Recreation and Marketing Supervisor Jessica Moran. Thank you.